Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is L.A. Steel. And glad you joined us. Tonight, I'm going to... I was thinking what I should be reading tonight. I decided to continue. I've been very pleased with the audience response to the reading of my book, and I thought I might continue. There were a few chapters that I have not read. A lot of the book I haven't read on the air, but I thought I would do that tonight. Some of them, and. And it seems odd how the, it seems rather odd how everything is cyclical, and everything that I was, so many things that I was talking about back in 2003 and 2004 and so on is happening again and again and again. And it's like we don't learn. That was one reason I wrote the book, Naked at the Mic, because it's really, I wrote it more, being a history student, a history major, I always had a fascination for history, and I always felt that the best history that I ever read, all right, was the best history that I've ever read were personal accounts, you know, personal biographies or autobiographies, I should say. They have a tendency to be much more, an autobiography can be more credible than somebody else writing about something they don't really know, you know. So essentially, what I wanted to cover tonight was I wanted to talk or read a few more selections in my book, and I'm about to do that here in just a second. Just trying to get to my switchboard. Okay, good. And of course, if anybody would like to call tonight, please feel free to call in, ask any questions that you may want or may have. I've read chapter 5 and 6 and 7, I believe. Into politics, and of course politics is what the book's about, and most of the book is about politics. It became extremely apparent to me a number of years ago that somebody had to try to explain what was happening in the political system. And, you know, I mean, quite frankly, I was very shocked when I, over the many years, at how corrupt the system was. And, you know, like most people, you who are not involved politically, you know, you're just involved in trying to make a living, trying to live,
trying to raise your family, trying to go to school, trying to get ahead, trying to do what you do, and you don't really pay that much attention to politics until you vote, you know. But when you're in the business like I am of trying to continually be, abreast of the current affairs and laws that are mandates and the political affairs that are the things that are going on. You have a. I always felt that I had a responsibility, all right, as an activist and as a reporter, if you will, but definitely as a broadcaster, not only to collect this information, but to categorize it and chronicle it, and make sense out of it, so that people could understand what actually happened. And yes, my book is vitriolic. My book is a little slanted, and so on and so forth. It was devised that way because it's part of my personality. It's what it's about. It's what I'm about. And it's what I fight for constantly. And Lila, my co-host Lila, is the same way. And we feel a very strong commitment to seeking the truth as we can find it. And we feel a responsibility about staying abreast of these things and knowing what's happening to the environment, knowing what's happening in Washington, knowing what's happening in the mainstream media, but also in the alternative media. Because we know over the many years of the last 10 years of broadcasting on television and radio, we know how censored the American mainstream media is. And I had thought about doing that, and I may read some essays tonight on the mainstream media. But what I wanted to do, it was chapter 9 of my book. I have 16 chapters, by the way, but chapter 9 is called The Theft of a Nation by Deaf, Dumb, and Blind Liberals. Now, I am a liberal, and there's no doubt about that in my mind. But I was extremely appalled and have been by the lack of backbone. I quote Rush Limbaugh when he says linguini spine liberals, and it's true. We are. I refuse to accept the fact that I'm a linguini spine liberal, and that's one reason I so adamantly have hung on to this program, this commercial program that we do on WQQQ, and this Blog Talk radio program, because somebody's got to say this stuff. Somebody has got to say this. Somebody has got to bring it forward and bring forward the truth. And we hope that we do that in as many ways as possible. And sometimes we probably miss the mark, but by God, it's not by lack of effort to put the truth out there. And when I wrote this book, it took me 5 years to accumulate to write it and to accumulate all of the documents and interviews and so on that we've had in order to accurately describe what happened there and what happened during those years. And this particular chapter in chapter 9, it's called The Theft of a Nation by Deaf, Dumb, and Blind Liberals. And it's self-explanatory, but let me go through it. It's not that long a chapter. It's about 4 or 5 pages. But, of course, my book is a little larger than most books. The size of the book, actually, is the physical size of the book is a little larger than most. Let me start reading.
No, it barely raises an eyebrow when I say that George W. Bush was an illegal president. I yelled that statement over an open microphone for the last 6 years. I remember this book was, I finished this book in 2009, which was the latter part of this year, and it got published in March, or almost April. When I talk about this, when I speak about this, I have to backtrack a little bit and correct this last 6 years. It's actually been now, it's been over 7 years since March. So I just wanted to correct that, but it says, I yelled that statement over an open microphone for the last 6 years. George W. Bush and the Republican Party stole both elections, and no one but a few election fraud activists did anything or even cared. I showed undeniable evidence that the Republicans stole the elections in the most corrupt voting scandal ever conceived by a democratic nation. I interviewed Jesse Jackson, Bob Pertakis, and Susan Pruitt, the leading civil and voter rights advocates in the country, and the lead attorneys to sued Secretary of State Blackwell of Ohio for election fraud. All stated and displayed undeniable proof of a rabid election fraud in the 2004 presidential election. I have a confirmed and undying belief that less than 1% of the population of the United States decides the fate and fortunes of all of the other 99%. The 2000 census stated that there were 285 million legal citizens in the United States. 1% of that number is 2,850,000 people. There are no more than 100,000 liberal activists in this country that will put their lives and money on the line for a worthy cause. This doesn't include all the little and big charities for hearts, lungs, and rare blood diseases. Liberal activists are involved in society-changing movements. These are the people I tip my hat to, whether their cause is environmental, anti-war, animal rights, human rights, etc. These few individuals make up the movers and shakers of liberal consciousness in American society. Some are wealthy and many are not. Many are of the radical element of our society who are frustrated and angry at the injustice and political indifference in their communities, state, and nation, and have formed vital organizations to lead the way to significant change for the better. Others are the loyal and committed members of local, state, and national action committees. It takes an intelligent and well-informed individual to be an effective activist. They must have courage. They must be driven by their mission. They must be compassionate and humble in order to understand the needs of those they are advocating for. They must be able to negotiate, persuade, sell, organize, and intimidate all at the same time in order to be most effective. They must never lose sight of their goal and mission, and they must be willing to sacrifice their personal lives and reputations to include their work and worry. These activists voted against Bush in 2000 and 2004 and organized countless political volunteers to work hard for their chosen candidates. For these people, I feel a great and deep sadness because they stood their ground and faced down these conservative hordes that shouted obscenities at them and caused riots in Florida in 2000 and challenged millions of voters in 2004. I feel sadness and sorrow and empathy for them because I know they did all they could, but were ignored by the national media and by the Democratic Party, and were betrayed twice by the Democratic Party's presidential candidates. Because of these betrayals, all true liberal activists now understand the futility of this two-party system and regret all the idealism and energy they exchanged for the simple hope of fair elections in one country in the world that is supposed to defend fair elections and the inalienable rights of men and women. They were hit hard, and many succumbed to cynicism. Some may have even given up hope of ever changing the world, or even their small part of the world, for the better. We cannot blame ourselves. Those of us who worked for, protested, and demanded a fair election, we can blame the media and the apathy of the majority of Americans for the Republican theft of the 2000 election and the fatally flawed decision of George Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan appointees on the Supreme Court. The 2000 theft of the White House radicalized me into activism, to become a radical television and radio talk show host. I never again wanted to be without a voice to argue against and expose the lie, corruption, and injustices in the U.S. and around the world. I never again wanted to be silent about social issues, homelessness, poverty, wrongful imprisonment, racism, and insane government policies. I needed a louder voice other than my normal tone of voice to call down those who have brought the United States to the brink of ruin. So I do what I do, and I say what I say, and inform all who will listen to me. I fear I have not been effective enough in many in my efforts to inspire my listeners and viewers to scream at the top of their voices and march on Washington, D.C. to demand the impeachment of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and strike fear in the hearts of congressmen and senators for them to demand to pull out of the U.S. Iraq and Afghanistan. To demand the pullout of the U.S. from Iraq and Afghanistan, correct the social problems in the U.S., and live up to their oath of office. But I will continue as long as I have a voice or vehicle to denounce the wrongs I see. Solidarity is the key to American activism. And definite social change. Without it, liberal activists are nothing more than single voices that often the founders of impoverished, ineffective nonprofits. My great concern for any true liberal movement is that so many activists are really wolves in activist clothing. Infiltration, wiretapping, and illegal and legal monitoring of all liberal political activist groups, including the Quakers, has kept the movement divided and fighting amongst each other. In December of 2001, I filmed for my television show a speech given by Ralph Nader at the Bar Restaurant in New Haven, Connecticut. The speech was sponsored by the Connecticut Green Party 3 months after 9/11. Nader stated that the great problem with the Green Party was the divisiveness and the great ego conflicts among its members. He stated that one of the worst offenders was the Massachusetts Greens. He commended the Connecticut Green Party for its solidarity in making headway in the 2000 elections. He also spoke of the sudden silence by the left and the media because of 9/11. He stated there suddenly came over the country a form of thought police that blamed any critical voice of government and silenced the left. The right-wing faction of the country took root by its illegal election and the neocon victory. 9/11 changed everything and the entire mood of the nation and the world for most of the following year of 2002. Just prior to 9/11, the talk of impeachment of Bush was rampant. Polls showed Bush's approval rating at 30%. After 9/11, George Bush received his highest ever approval ratings, and the press remained mute on the stolen election of 2000. And the conservative control of the media created a virtual ban on all liberal argument. All anti-war activists and spokesmen were humiliated by the conservative-dominated media and White House censorship and given no time on the public airways to speak on behalf of peace efforts and the obvious manipulation of intelligence by the CIA and the Bush administration, who were preparing the still-in-shock American people to go to war with Iraq. The U.S. had already invaded Afghanistan. Out of fear of falsehood and treason, the Democrats blanketed themselves in silence and immediately granted G.W. Bush the pre-written Patriot Act without debate, giving him unprecedented power to wage preemptive war against any nation. This cowardly and traitorous action by the Congress led the United States into the worst debacle since Vietnam. The liberal American became silenced and stupefied by the rapid acceleration of events by the Bush administration. Not only did the atrocity of war in Iraq become imminent, but also the revelation that the U.S. Congress did not even read the Patriot Act before they unanimously voted it, passed it, was an outrageous act of congressional cowardice and incompetence. Because of the Democratic blunder and collusion with the Bush administration, the people voted against the Democrats in the elections of 2002, assuring the Republicans of a majority in both the House and the Senate. The Democrats and any liberal faction in the country was knocked flat on its ass, leaving it punch drunk and unable to get back on its feet to regroup. The defeat of 2000, followed by the dubious events of 9/11, followed up by the Patriot Act and the conservative takeover of the media, was a 1-2-3-4 punch that liberals in America were unable to recover from until 2006. Then the Democrats betrayed the voters again by refusing to commence impeachment proceedings against G.W. Bush or withdraw from Iraq. By the end of 2002, the country had undergone a complete conservative coup. Every moron and maniac in the country was a conservative and loved George Bush. Brainless idiots became instant celebrities as the media spotlighted them for waving a flag or defending the war on G.W. Bush. Homeowner associations and trailer park owners were vilified for not allowing idiots to display the American flag on the front of their homes. Courageous and outraged liberal activists were condemned and threatened with arrest by the new Patriot police stormtroopers, petty dictator bosses, and store and mall owners, who threatened, fired, or had arrested anyone who wore anti-war or anti-Bush t-shirts or displayed bumper stickers. The invasion of the morons was complete. The conservative coup, which was a success until 2003, when the neocons couldn't find a way to convince the American people to invade Iraq, which was their real plan all along. Afghanistan was just an inconvenience, but was needed to secure the Caspian Sea pipeline for Dick Cheney's Halliburton. On a lighter side of this time of patriotism in the spring of 2002, Lila and I were driving back from New London, Connecticut, after taping a show, when we were passed by a dilapidated old blue sedan that had its back door tied to the car by a rope strung through the window and tied around the roof. The driver was heavyset and had long hair and glasses, and he and his two passengers smiled and waved at us as they passed by. On the trunk of the car, tied with a rope, was a 3-foot-tall plastic statue of Liberty to hide the fact that his trunk didn't close. But Lila and I laughed hysterically as we watched the car pass by, and when a state police cruiser began to follow the car for a short while and decided to pass it. It was obvious that the blue dilapidated sedan couldn't pass an inspection and was a road hazard, but its driver passed the Patriot test. The real neocon prize was Iraq. Anyone with any intelligence saw through the lies. They saw that Iraq posed no immediate or even future threat to America or to its own Arab neighbors. The years of secret U.S. bombings and sanctions had already neutered Saddam Hussein, but as is the neocon hyena method of kill and destroy a weak and dying creature and eat its sickly remains, Bush and his pack of hyenas went for the kill, even if they had to commit high treason and several other major felonies in the process. Bush has been quoted as saying, related to this, his understanding of the U.S. Constitution and his oath to defend it, "It's just a goddamn piece of paper." Yes, George, it's just a piece of paper that stands between you and an execution by public hanging. If the true pent-up liberal wrath could be waged against Bush and his conservative support group in this country, what fireworks there would be. It would be a 4th of July works show like no other. Every traitorous neocon and collaborator would be dragged out to the streets and tarred and feathered and burned at the stake. Wow, what a grand and glorious revolution that would be. Is this too radical? It's what the early Americans did to their traitors when they founded this country by revolution. Ah, but where are the leaders? Where are the supermen and women that will lead the revolution? They aren't where everyone might think they are. Don't look to the Democratic Party to find them. They're the ones that got us into this mess we are in now. Don't look to the Republicans to show any leadership. They should be running for their lives and fleeing the country. Don't expect the post-stress syndrome members of the mighty U.S. military. Those who are deserting are becoming Canadian pacifists, and the rest are either critically wounded or still brainwashed into believing Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were best drinking buddies, and that George W. Bush is the second coming of Christ. As late as 2005, a poll conducted of military personnel stated that 90% of all polled believed Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. This was after it was reported by the CIA and mainstream media that there was no connection to 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. Where then does that leave the poor liberal in America? We have to think small. Think in terms of daily mischief, like sending a hate mail to the White House from your right-wing co-worker. If someone you know wants to enlist in the military, encourage them. They will wonder if you're serious. Liberals must become radicals. That is the only way to end this hell on earth guarded by the religious right as they pray for the end of the world so that they can rapture into fundamentalist heaven. Liberals, if they are liberals and believe in the good and compassion and enlightened spirit of man, must not and should never retreat from the barbarian invaders from planet Numbnuts. Stand up to them, but do it smartly. You can win without even knowing it. Without them even knowing it. It's all underground now. The left will regain its country and its strength, but it's all underground now until we win. Even the Obama presidency, nothing has changed. The Democrats are still wimps who will sell this country down the proverbial drain. Remember that conservatives and rabid Republicans are everywhere. They are pissed off and desperate. Barack Obama has had more death threats against him than any other president since Lincoln. Liberals are not safe either. We have more to fear from the Democrats than the Republicans to protect our personal dignity in our country. Trusting Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or the new Congress to do what is right for this nation and uphold the true values of liberal Americans is pure folly and extremely dangerous. We have already proven their stupidity and lack of courage to the American people with countless examples, and we can expect them to continue their floundering in these vast voids of their characters. That's the end of that chapter, basically. It's how the left became so discombobulated, you know, discharged, I know because it was there. I saw it in 2000. I was appalled at what happened. And then again in 2004, and it's just beyond me. And we suffered through 8 long years of Bush. And then what did we get with Obama? You know, I heard him say it today, which was probably true. And no doubt about it. That the nightmare that Bush got us into was so bad. It was so bad that Obama says if all that we've done in the last 2 years has gotten us 3/4 of the way up out of this mess, he says, to most people it still looks like we're still in a big mess. But he says, you know, we're 3/4 out of it. He says, we got another quarter to go, he says, and we're hoping that, you know, that the people will stay with us, and we hope that the elections won't prove to be, that people will remember that the Republicans and Republican policies are what got us into this mess. But I want to retract, I have to correct that statement that he made today in his interview with, I believe it was Chuck Todd or whatever his name is. And he said that there was no, you know, but we forget, the Democrats haven't done any great shakes, you know, none at all, okay? And this health insurance thing that he's got through is more of a nightmare from living hell, okay, than it is a help to, from if you read it and you look at it, which I've done. This thing offers nothing to anybody. I mean, this thing is a freaking nightmare. And it, thank God it doesn't go into effect until 2014, right? But it's like, by then, maybe they'll have this, a good sense of repealing it, right? Secondly, right, this bank bailout, this was just sheer unbelievable insanity. And we gave over $1 trillion to $1.4 trillion, right? And I read an article recently that it was as much as $24 trillion to bail out the world. We actually bailed out the goddamn world, all right? The American taxpayer did, the Fed, okay? And the Fed doesn't issue money unless the American taxpayer is paying them back, okay? That's the way central banking works. So it's like, fuck BP, okay? The British Petroleum or the British government. I mean, we bailed those bastards out, okay, in this depression, in this recession, okay, to the tune of Bank of Scotland and Barclays and so on. We gave them trillions of dollars to bail those assholes out. And, you know, and pardon my French, but, you know, it was infuriating. And to watch this happen under Obama, under a Democratic former government, you know, just makes you sick. Makes me sick. But getting back to, I didn't want to go off here on this, but getting back to the book, the next chapter, I was going to read The Creation of the Radical Underground, which is chapter 10. And but I think I would prefer that you buy the book and read that one, since it's rather inflammatory, but it's you know, I think I would rather have you read this than myself reading it. It's a short chapter, but it gets to the point. How to create an underground. The next chapter I'm going to read is chapter 13. Chapter 13 is entitled "The Environmental Menaces from the Right and Left," and in this I cite one report that has been completely, utterly buried, and never really saw the light of day. And I put it in here virtually verbatim because I documented it because as to where you could get it, possibly get it on if it hasn't been taken down from the websites and so on. But I haven't seen any follow-up to this since then. And but I put it in the book because I felt it was critical, absolutely critical, right? That it be in print, you know, and then people can verify its facts. At least they'll see that this it did exist, it was real. But we have heard nothing from anywhere. Nor, interestingly enough, have we heard anything from the Ukraine, where this nightmare took place, and no news from that area, Poland, or any area. It's almost as though the news has become been a blackout, you know, for the last 6 or 8 months. That area, in the news, in the national news, and tremendous turmoil going on there. So I wanted to read this this last chapter here before we end the show tonight, because it's something near and dear to my heart. And every week we do an environmental report with John Brennan on chemtrails and Gulf oil and Gulf problems and whatever else, involvement in other things around the world, genetically modified foods and so on. But let me continue with this. Chapter 13, the environmental menaces from the right and left. Defending the environment will always be high on my priority list of issues. In over a quarter of a century since the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, the national and international environment has been under extreme assault. We cannot look up at the sky without seeing the nonstop crisscrossing trails of chemical plumes being sprayed into our atmosphere, or breathe the gray ash pollutants of petrochemicals, exhaust fumes, and particulate matter, or consume heavy metals and toxic chemicals leaching into our groundwaters and contaminating the soil, then absorbed into our food and drinking water. The overwhelming indifference of the American people and their local, state, and federal governments to these imminent dangers to the public health is unconscionable. The mass ignorance of the American people toward the obvious dangers to their immediate health risk and to their environment staggers my imagination. I remember when litter was a vast problem in the United States. As a teenager, I became concerned with the issue as I began to drive. I would so often see people throw garbage from their windows or from their cars as they drove along the highway. I would often smell burning garbage in my small town in Maine and in other states I had traveled in. Garbage dumps were everywhere. Forests, rivers, and streams were often polluted by farmers and companies who wanted to get rid of toxic chemicals or fertilizers. Fertilizers or needed makeshift dumps. Having grown up in a rural farm community, I witnessed firsthand the absolute stupidity and lack of public safety that was blatantly obvious to me but few others. Not until the late 1960s and early 1970s was anything done about air, water, and water pollution. Today, because of environmental activists, we have litter laws and pollution laws and public safety acts that minimally protect our people and environment. The courageous activists who achieved these milestones in public awareness and safety are still ridiculed and considered by the mainstream media and conservative pundits as the American public in general, and the American public in general as tree huggers or left-wing radicals, communists, socialists, or some other epithet given to these concerned patriotic Americans who continue their fight against corporate and government irresponsibility and criminality regarding environmental issues and the public safety. Not until a tragic industrial accident or an environmental catastrophe occurs does the American public pay attention to these imminent dangers and demand a response by their government. The G.W. Bush administration has been chiefly responsible for the dismantling of all EPA regulations and worker safety regulations to appease their corporate masters, big oil, big chemical, big pharmaceutical, big auto, big lumber, big mining, big military contractors, etc. A report by the Washington Post in 2006 stated that the EPA had decided to solve the issue of animals on the endangered species list by allowing the hunting of these animals, and that the fee charged to the hunters would be used to fund the future protection of endangered species. The Bushman mentality proves that intelligent bureaucrats in the EPA have become extinct. The recent call for more nuclear power plants and the greatest of all Bush, Cheney, Gore, and Obama insanity. Nuclear power is the most dangerous source of energy on the planet. Radioactive spent fuel rods have a radioactive lifespan of 25,000 years. There is no place left to store nuclear fuel rods or nuclear waste, nor is there any safe way to transport them. Today, most nuclear waste is stored on site at the nuclear power plants. The Great Yucca Mountain debacle will never be completed due to the threat of contamination of the aquifers in Nevada. All legitimate studies on the nuclear industry and nuclear waste proves beyond any reasonable doubt that nuclear power is a global catastrophe waiting to happen. Chernobyl became an unheeded global warning. Proponents of nuclear power are all paid mouthpieces for the nuclear industry. The sad and sick reality of nuclear power is that millions of people who have died or are dying from radiation illnesses around the world caused by nuclear power plants and nuclear waste dumps and depleted uranium ammunition used by armies around the world. Unexplainable cancer clusters are in every community where a power plant exists. Entire communities are being deceived by the amount of radiation emitted from the nuclear power plants. Many of these old plants are unsafe and are operating under expired licenses, readily renewed without inspections by nuclear power promoters of those of both Republican and Democratic administrations. Few Americans know that the Safeguard Nuclear Agency, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, is solely funded by the nuclear industry. The most insidious proposal ever presented to the House for approval by the EPA was an attempt by the G.W. Bush administration in 2006 to allow the testing of household chemicals on foster children and children of poor families. The poor families would have been paid $900 for the use of their children in the experiment. The experiments would have tested the toxic effects of household chemicals such as insect and rodent poisons, drain openers, sprays, soaps, detergents, fertilizers, and similar products. This bill was defeated by the House due to the swift action by environmental activists around the country and hundreds of thousands of liberal petitioners demanding its defeat. Not one conservative magazine or conservative blog of note covered the issue, neither did any of the network or cable news outlets. I vehemently spoke out against this bill for weeks until the House killed the bill due to overwhelming pressure from liberal constituents, spurred by liberal bloggers and environmental groups. This is what a solid liberal movement can accomplish when it focuses on defeating the criminal activity of Republican and Democratic administrations. As I write this, Americans are being bombarded with aerosol spraying of bioweapons, microwave cell towers, and high-power electric transmission line radiation, ground and water contamination, and air pollution. The rise of cancers, childhood and adult asthma, bronchial congestive diseases, immunodeficiency diseases such as multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, Parkinson's disease, AIDS, Alzheimer's, are all suspected to be caused by pollution, and especially chemtrails, atmospheric aerosol spraying. The LA Steel Show is committed to environmental activism and has an exclusive weekly report by freelance reporter John Brennan reporting on chemtrails and other government-sponsored weather-related black operations that directly affect the local, national, and global environment. John has called in live reports from Ireland, Switzerland, and Chile. John Brennan lives and works in Connecticut. The most obvious sociopathic disorder of the Bush administration was the utter disregard of the people of New York City after the event of 9/11. 2 days after the collapse of the World Trade Center towers, the air around Manhattan was tested and found to be consistent with Drano. That's correct, Drano drain cleaner. The levels of asbestos, lead, radiation, mercury, pulverized concrete, and metallic particles were independently tested, and the results were made public. Christy Todd Whitman, then head of EPA, had been forced by the G.W. Bush administration to state that the air quality in New York City was safe to breathe. The federal government, for the sake of opening Wall Street, decided to falsify their EPA air quality reports and jeopardize the lives of millions of Americans, millions of people in the New York City, as well as surrounding cities, towns, and states, forced thousands of volunteers and first responders to work without the adequate breathing apparatuses needed to work in the 911 site. Rudy Giuliani, the mayor and later GOP presidential candidate in 2008, demanded first responders and 9/11 cleanup crews not to wear breathing masks or proper safety equipment. As of this writing, 10,000 first responders are suing New York City and the state of New York for 9/11 health-related injuries, and since 9/11-01, over 800 WTC first responders that died from respiratory ailments and cancer. There's an update to that. I wrote the book. Suit has been was settled for $650 million. That's right, from the city of New York and the state of New York. That's right. So that happened recently to all those responders. It really wasn't enough money. There should have been billions of dollars in remunerations. But can anyone smell corruption in the air? Can anyone see the conspiracy? Why and how was this allowed to happen? Who allowed it to happen? These questions demand answers, yet G.W. Bush and Rudy Giuliani refuse to offer any answers or justification for their murderous actions. And the conspicuously complicit mainstream media said and did nothing. The American people did nothing except die. Thousands have died as a direct result of 9/11 air quality over the last 8 years. Thousands of American soldiers have died or have been seriously wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan. Millions of Iraqis and Afghanis have been displaced, murdered, or maimed, all because G.W. Bush wanted them to be. Ignorance, cruelty, and stupidity of a sociopathic president are no excuses for the slaughter of millions of innocent people and the expenditure of trillions of dollars to enable the imperial delusions of G.W. Bush and his henchmen. There are thousands of documented cases that evidence to show the insane disregard of the G.W. Bush administration, its lack of honest EPA evaluations, and illogical, irrational, sociopathic attitude toward the human race and the natural environment. On October 29th and 31st of 2009, according to verified Ukrainian sources and reported by an article written by Dr. Rebecca Carley, a noted expert in vaccine-induced disease syndrome, posted on Infowars.com November 16th, 2009, entitled A Tale of Two Stories, The European Biowar Outbreak and the Censoring of It by the Mainstream Media, states that hundreds of witnesses reported low-flying airplane aerosol spraying something over Ukrainian cities. As of the evening of October 29th, massive numbers of people became very sick. Now, this is October 29th, 2009. And this was reported November 16th, 2009. Mass number of people. The Ukrainian government immediately denied any involvement of aerosol spraying. The World Health Organization did not call for a quarantine of the infected Ukrainian regions or limit air travel to other countries. Autopsies on hundreds who have died due to this new plague show lung temperatures of 130 to 135 degrees Fahrenheit, and lungs are filled with blood and are black in color, and that the lung tissue is turned to mush. Symptoms occur within 24 to 48 hours upon infection. According to Dr. Carley's article, 200,000 people per day were infected by the disease, and the disease was spread throughout Poland, where 250,000 people are seriously ill with the virus. Dr. Carley also stated that we know that the corporate-owned mainstream media has censored this story in a way that has never happened before. We know that this outbreak of an unknown but deadly and very rapidly spreading disease in Europe is the largest story on earth, but that it is not being reported on. Dr. Carley credits in part for her article EuropeBusiness.blogspot.com and MigNews.com UA/EN/articles 378759/. And then I'm going on 13.11.2009/14:24/. This is, if you want to look this up, this is where it's at. She also quotes sources that state American military pilots in a Russian-made tanker equipped with chemtrailing equipment were forced to land by the Indian Air Force and Nigerian fighter jets in Mumbai, and the crew was arrested. Another article regarding the Ukrainian plague was posted on November of 2009. Excuse me, I'm sorry. PreventDisease.com entitled Ukraine Pneumonic Plague, a new strain of flu many times more lethal than H1N1. The article states, there is very organized and structured system among us to coordinate the release of weaponized flu with the goal of killing people at unprecedented rates. The pneumonic plague now being witnessed in the Ukraine may be just the beginning of the global effort. The statistics being reported by the Ukrainian government are very misleading. The reported cases are doubled in 2 days. According to the latest updates, there are 478,556 influenza/ARI cases. 24,003 have been hospitalized, 60 on ventilators, and 81 deaths, although the actual figures may be exponentially higher. With the so-called Mexican swine flu, we saw the gross ineffectiveness of national governments and the World Health Organization in preventing the spread of H1N1, which is a mild virus. This new lab-produced virus is certainly a killer, and we can likely expect it to spread throughout the world in the next few weeks or months. The mainstream media seems to be collectively timing the release of this information for some opportune moment. The World Health Organization recently confirmed that the H1N1 virus showed no signs of mutating or becoming more virulent, which leaves little alternative but to conclude that the virus is either a random mutation, proving the WHO wrong, or that it has been a newly released bioweapon, possibly courtesy of Baxter International. The pneumonic plague has an acute course that other forms is accompanied by very high mortality rate. The incubation period of primary pneumonic plague rarely exceeds more than 1 to 4 days. It begins as a rule suddenly with shivering, fever, headache, myalgia, weakness, and nausea. The symptoms of phenomena of pneumonia, cough with phlegm, chest pain, short of breath, usually appear on the second day of the disease. Blood spitting, growing respiratory disorders, heart failure, shock are being observed in primary pneumonic plague. Phlegm usually is watery or mucusy formed, and blood visibly bloody. It can be caused in two ways. Primary, which results in the inhalation of aerosol plague bacteria, or secondary, when systemic plague spreads into lung tissue from the bloodstream. Pneumonic plague is not exclusively vector-borne, like bubonic plague. However, or instead, it can be spread from person to person. There have been cases of pneumonic plague resulting from the dissection of handling of contaminated animal tissue. This is one type of formerly known black plague. It could kill 90 to 100% of a population if the victims coughed and passed on the bacteria. The secondary pneumonic plague occurs as interstitial pneumonia. Phlegm is scanty and some dense and vicious. And in primary pulmonary plague, it is believed that in this regard, patients are less contagious. The explosion of cases again raises concern that the number of fatalities is significantly higher than the 81 listed. Media reports have described an equal number of pneumonia fatalities, which will not be considered flu related. The basis of these exclusions remain unclear. Similarly, anecdotal reports suggest that the number of fatalities is markedly higher than the 81 in the government tables. There is a very organized and structured system among us to coordinate the release of weaponized flu and the goal of killing people at unprecedented rates. The pneumonic plague now being witnessed in the Ukraine may be just the beginning of this global effort. Reports from a few days ago indicated that Ukraine has shut down its schools, universities, and cinemas, and banned public gatherings, including concert, movies, etc., for the foreseeable future. They have also mobilized military and quarantine units. There is currently a national tightening of borders around the country. We could be seeing something of a monumental importance happening in the Ukraine. An advanced biological, genetically engineered killer virus has been released. Some infectious disease experts are asserting that this virus is not H1N1, although it may or may not have some of the swine flu genetic material in it. It is typically behaving like a hemorrhagic fever in the lungs, turning them into mush and killing the patient. Some reports in the Ukraine are indicating that figures may well be over 1,000 deaths, but the numbers are not being released by the government until confirmations are made. Moreover, the virus could have the potential to combine with both, with those being vaccinated to create a plague that could potentially kill more than 1 million people globally per month. 1 million people per month. Due to the staggering importance and urgency of this information of the recent outbreak, I have quoted. Okay, this is me stating I had just quoted that entire article because due to the staggering importance and urgency of this information of the recent outbreak, I have quoted these articles in great length as a public service, an alert based upon the fair use copyright laws, and to authenticate their validity and credit the authors and websites for their diligent coverage of the highly censored news report in case these articles are removed from the Internet before this book is released in print. I highly urge readers to check these sources and others regarding the Ukrainian plague. Also, Google the Global 2000 report, initiated by Jimmy Carter and signed off by President Reagan. Refer to my essays, Murder by Chemtrails, Global 2000, and Human Population Reduction, in the Essays and Insights section of this book under Metaphysics. And I'm going to end with that tonight. That was chapter 13 of my book, and I believe chapter 7 I read. Yeah. Jeff Hellman, Blind Liberals. Or is that 9? I think it was 9. Yeah, chapter 9. Read chapter 9 and chapter 13. So, of Naked at the Mic, Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. And you can get that from iUniverse.com. Please go to that. If you want to go buy a digital, it's available in a digital format as well for $9.99. But iUniverse is carrying it. I suggest you go there. If you have an account with Amazon, also you can go to Amazon.com and get it as well. But for the digital is only offered on the by iUniverse.com. So please go to that. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight, hope to see you tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we're going to have author Ross Hamill, and we're going to be joined by Ross Hamill and Brandon Brigadier, who joined us last week, and George Dixon. And, of course, Lila will be with us. And we're going to be talking about A Tradition of Giants, which is the book that Ross Hamilton wrote. And I believe George will, Ross, the author, will be with us. So I hope everybody will join us tomorrow, and I want to thank you for joining me tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, pick up the book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. Go to iUniverse.com, put that name in there, and check it out. Also, you can get it. It's available on Amazon.com, and there's a preview there. So, thank you, and good night.